Blog Talk Radio.
There is a watchman on the wall, bringing forth the written word of God to one and all. Are you getting ready? Will you stand or will you fall? Listen to the watchman on the wall. Listen to the watchman on the wall. Listen to the watchman on the wall.
Arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. A new day has dawned. All over the earth, men and women are arising. It's time for the sons of God to awake. It is a day of justice, recompense, restoration, revival, and resurrection power. Over the past few years, voters all over the world rejected globalism in favor of nationalism. In the United States, Donald Trump ran on an American first agenda and became president. He promised to stop illegal immigration, pull America out of bad international agreements, and change free trade deals to fair trade deals. Months earlier, voters in the United Kingdom opted to leave the European Union, known as Brexit. To this day, their decision remains a thorn in the side of the global elite. In 2019, not much has changed. Recent elections indicate nationalism remains popular. In India, Hindu nationalist Prime Minister Narendra Modi won another term, running on a pro-Hindu nationalist platform. India re-elected him in a landslide. In Britain, the Brexit Party, formed just months ago, finished first with 30% of the vote. With 29 seats, it's now the single biggest party in the European Parliament. In France, President Emmanuel Macron saw his party lose ground in the European elections to Marine Le Pen's national rally. Just 2 years ago, Macron handily defeated Le Pen in the presidential election. This time, her party won 23% of the vote versus 22% for Macron's party. In Italy, Matteo Salvini's nationalist party, known as the League, finished first with 34% of the vote. Throughout the EU, the same story played out over and over. Nationalist politicians scored stunning victories. Does all this mean the world is reversing its trend toward globalism? Will traditional nationalist policies become the norm? Probably not. Recent events significantly slowed the transformation, but the world is still trending toward globalism. Despite recent setbacks, the globalist agenda is in a better position than it's ever been. Why? Because young people embrace it, and young people are the future. Current voters may reject the globalist agenda, but according to several surveys, future voters don't. Globally, the millennials, those born between 1981 and 1996, outnumber both the baby boomers and Generation X, and they believe the concept of being a citizen of a single country is outdated. To them, global citizenship is the way of the future. In 2017, Western Union surveyed more than 10,000 millennials from 15 countries, including the United States, India, and Russia. What they found provides a glimpse of where we're heading in the years to come. Here are just a few of the results. 79% believe limitless movement around the world will empower them. 29% believe a single global currency will foster great global unity. 61% believe global institutions like the United Nations are more representative of them versus national, 48%, or local governments, 44%. In the 2016 Global Shapers Annual Survey, more than 26,000 millennials from 181 countries gave their opinions on world issues. Results included 48% of millennials see climate change as the most serious issue the world faces. And when it comes to solving global problems, respondents say they trust international organizations 26% more than they trust themselves, 20%. So 36% of respondents view themselves as global citizens. This is a higher number than those who view themselves as national citizens or members of religion. So many young people see themselves as global citizens first. They think borders should be open. They believe climate change is the world's top problem, and they look to global political institutions for answers. This gives us a glimpse of what the world will look like in the future. Why? Because millennial opinions will shape the world in the coming decades. Well, we're going to talk more about that as we go today, but we have a dear brother all the way from Australia that is waiting to come and join us on the air, and I'm sure he has something to say about the millennials today. Daniel Seckham, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Pastor Vincent. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you once again, although it's a little chilly downstairs where I am in my house. All of the heating is upstairs, so I'm down in the coldest part of my place.
Okay, so you're going into winter time. We're just getting ready to go into summertime, and it's about 1 o'clock
in
the morning.
You guys should already be in summer.
No, our actual official summer begins on June 21st. We're 3 days from summer, officially.
Okay, well, it's already the 20th. It's already Thursday the 20th here, so it's tomorrow.
Your tomorrow is here today.
Yeah.
I don't know where we are.
I live in the future. That's
you
why,
do.
That's why I'm an end times teacher, because I live in the future and I can tell you what's going to happen.
I love that, and I believe that. That's why you're on the radio right now. And we've been trying for the last, you know, Daniel, since we talked last week, we're really putting our miner's caps on. We don't claim that we've discovered gold yet. We haven't hit the Eureka yet, but we are digging down into the meaning of the book of Revelation and the beast with seven heads. And we're looking at the seven kings, the seven kingdoms, the seven systems. And I found something in Genesis chapter 2, where there is a system of the kingdom of God right there in Genesis chapter 2, and how the enemy in the last days is taking it all over. But globalism, nationalism, the millennials, they are all about globalism. Speak into that. What's on your heart today? Let's warm you up a little bit.
Well, that's a fascinating topic that you should raise, because this is the issue of our day. Now, remember that it says, I believe in, correct me if I'm wrong, Vincent, but in Isaiah 46, verse 10, I think it says, where God says, I will reveal to you the end from the beginning. In fact, if I remember correctly, Pastor Vincent, I think it was the first time I came over to Arkansas and spent time with you guys. It was a conversation we had in the car where I was sharing with you how God reveals to us a lot of the things that are happening in the end times as a result of what we find in the book of Genesis. And you said to me, yeah, there's a scripture about that. And you quoted to me that scripture from Isaiah, and I will reveal to you the end from the beginning. And I just couldn't believe it. It was like the light bulb went on. And I remember saying to myself, so I'm not going crazy. So I am right. So God has confirmed that this is a key to understanding biblical prophecy. And I'd have to say it's probably one of the most powerful keys in understanding the end times. By understanding, having an understanding of what we read in Genesis and in Exodus, we can have an understanding in how it all unfolds at the end times. And it's no mistake that the enemy, that the devil absolutely detests and loathes and hates the book of Genesis and the book of Revelation. He hates the book of Genesis because it's all about our origins. It's all about our identity, our origins and identity and our foundations. And he hates the book of Revelation because it's all about our destiny. That's really important to understand. And most importantly, it's all about our destiny and our victory. He hates the book of Revelation. He hates the book of Genesis. Now, getting back to what you were saying, you find, you know, it's interesting that what we're seeing in these last days, especially among the culture, this culture among the this Babylon culture that we're seeing, this pagan culture, is that there is a rebellion, a great rebellion against the natural law, the created order that we see from Genesis. So, for example, you know, in Genesis chapter 2, where we see that man is created for woman and woman is created for man, that man and woman are complementary to each other, and that life comes out from that union between a man and a woman, and that God has mandated man and woman to populate the earth through that unique union, and Satan is rebelling massively with homosexuality, but more than that, he's rebelling with this whole transgenderism thing, because basically it's people are rejecting the gender, the sex that God has created them to be. And this is rejecting their core identity. And again, we read in the book of Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, where God actually calls that those who do this and for women to take on things that pertains to a man and vice versa is an abomination. It is detestable to the Lord. So we're seeing those things. But here's the other interesting thing, and this gets back to your question. The other interesting thing is that, and this is in particularly what we see in Genesis chapter 10 in regard to the Tower of Babel. See, the original command from God was to go out and to populate the earth, to go out and to populate the earth. That's what he commanded. Actually, my apologies, Genesis 11, in Genesis 11. So he instructed man to spread out and to populate the earth. Now, what we see within the Tower of Babel is where there is a rebellion against God's edict. There is a rebellion against God's commands. And interestingly, that all this happened at Babel. Now, who was the one who founded the city of Babylon? Well, it was a man called Nimrod. Nimrod was the man who founded the city of Babylon. What's fascinating about Nimrod is that his name in the Hebrew means "we will rebel." We will rebel. Which I think is absolutely fascinating, especially when you look at the destiny of that city. Because we see see three major epochs in regard to Babylon that we see throughout the ages. We see the Babylon in the early period, where the city of where it was founded by Nimrod, and there was this collective joint effort to build this tower to reach the heavens, which was an occultic, pagan occultic effort to do that. And so, but then you see this reemergence of Babylon again under Nebuchadnezzar. But then there is another future Babylon that appears in the book of Revelation that's referred to in the Old Testament as daughter of Babylon. And Jeremiah prophesies about this future Babylon in Jeremiah chapter 50 and 51. So we see it emerge again, and this is a future Babylon, but not the same thing. But what we saw happen with the nations is that they wanted to come together. They wanted to shed their national identity. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to shed their national identity. They wanted to rid themselves of that. They wanted to get rid of their homogeneity, and they wanted to get rid of anything that distinguished them from anybody else, from any of the other nations. And they wanted to come together as a single people that had a single speech, because the idea was that they would be able to accomplish anything because they were all in one communal bond. Literally, they were under commune. They were under one single commune. And that's where you get the word communism from. They were under one single commune. Now, Satan, first of all, let me establish the scriptural case for nationalism. So first of all, we find in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 8, it says, when the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all mankind, he set up boundaries for the peoples according to the number of the sons of Israel. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Now, the second thing that we find in Acts chapter 17, verse 26, it says that, and he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. So right there in that single verse, we see that God has instituted the nations. And because God has instituted the nations, Satan hates it. And this is why God is a nationalist and Satan is a globalist. He hates the idea of nations because of this particular reason. Satan's plan is centralization. He wants to centralize people. He wants to centralize organizations. He wants to centralize people groups, because when he centralizes them, he can easily control them. And that really is the crux of the whole matter. It's all about control. When there is when the people are broken up under different identities and different languages and different culture, it's much harder to control, because they are much more, have their own identity and common and particular practices and cultural differences. So it's much more difficult to break down. And that was God's plan. God's plan was to create a beautiful diversity among mankind. And what better way of creating a beautiful diversity among mankind than to institute the idea of nations? Because among nations, we find a different aspect of an expression of humanity. We find different aspects of an expression of humanity in the way that, you know, and this is one of the reasons why people love to travel. People love to travel because they get to see different cultures in the way that they have, way that they go about doing life, and the way that they, all the different food and cuisine and the fashion and the different things about their history and their geography and all these different kinds of things is what fills us with a sense of awe. And I must admit, when I travel and I see different cultures, I am filled with a sense of awe, and it makes me, it fills me with praise toward my Creator in regard to what God has done among the nations. Now, of course, there are some detrimental aspects of what we see in different cultures, and I must say off the bat that not all cultures are equal, which is a statement that the left absolutely hate, because the left believes that all cultures are equal. But there are some aspects among cultures that are very detrimental and are even harmful, which should be absolutely repudiated. But that said, there, you know, the concept of the nations is a wonderful thing, and Satan hates it because nationalism decentralizes and it basically makes it difficult for Satan to control. See, what we find in the scriptures is we find, especially in the last days, we find a one world government. And that's exactly what Satan wants, because he wants to control the world. He wants to enslave the entire world. See, back in World War II, we saw Nazi Germany come to the fore. And Nazi Germany had this vision of this thousand-year Reich in which the Nazis basically controlled the world. And it was a totalitarian vision, essentially, a dystopian vision in which basically Hitler had this warped ideology with this, Aryan supreme race and other races were not as equal and all this kind of stuff. All based on basically as a quasi-Marxist ideology. And he tried to enforce his vision on other nations. He invaded Poland, he invaded Belgium, the Netherlands, and France, and went eastward into Russia. And he tried, this was all about his expansion in regard to his perverted nationalist vision. Now, what stopped him was the Allies, in particular the United States. The United States came to the rescue of the French and of the British and basically turned the tide. And thank God for that. Thank God for that, because thank God for the United States. But here's the thing, and this is why we're in a very precarious position at the moment, Pastor Vincent, because Satan doesn't want a repeat of what happened in World War II. He doesn't want to create a totalitarian state to become to expand only for the United States to come to the rescue of the world again and to destroy that totalitarian state. What Satan is planning on doing this time around is that he is raising up totalitarian nations, but he is working his best to ensure that the United States would never, ever come to the rescue of the free world ever again. And this is why there is such a huge upheaval within American culture. And it is frightening to say that you could be an election cycle or maybe two election cycles away from a Democrat president coming to power. And if that ever happens, man, you can be assured that they would do everything they can to ensure that a Republican with a right wing Republican president will never get back into office. And this is why the left was such in a frenzy and such a ferment when Trump got in, and thank God he got in, because they thought they had in the bag. They basically thought the globalist agenda almost won, but it didn't. We've been gifted a reprieve, and thank God for that reprieve. And America could quite possibly, depending how things go, could get another reprieve next year, but we'll see what happens. So the nationalist, Satan, he's a globalist. He absolutely detests nationalism because he cannot control the globe. He cannot control the world while there are nation states and strong nation states with a strong sovereign identity. This is why he is doing what he can to destroy this whole concept of nationalism. He wants to demonize nationalism. You might remember that press conference, Pastor Vincent, when Trump got up and said that he's a nationalist because he wants to put America first, and the moment he said that, Jim Acosta, the correspondent from CNN, got up and said, "Oh, so you're a white nationalist?" In other words, trying to demonize him for loving his own country. But this is the tactic of the left. The left want to demonize anyone who loves their country, anyone who expresses any patriotism. The left want to demonize them. They're trying to get people to loathe and to be ashamed of loving their country. Because, you know, as G.K. Chesterton said, a man will not fight for his country unless he loves it. And how true that is.
That's a lot of information, great information that you're giving out right now. And we go back to the beginning of our conversation, how in the beginning, God has set everything in a divine order. We look at God's creation, Daniel, and it's perfect. I mean, we go back to the man that was created in his image and likeness. We see the seven systems of God in Genesis chapter 2. We see four rivers that have a major impact. This is all symbolic of the Holy Spirit, crystal clear river that we receive. There's so much to what God has done. And in these last days, Satan has done everything in his power to pervert and to twist every good, every God thing into something that is evil. And the key that I heard in everything you were saying is that it is all about Satan's desire to control. It's all about controlling. And how do you control 7 billion people? Well, according to the book of Revelation, by the time you get to Revelation chapter 10, half the population is wiped out, which is about 3.5 billion people. And so you reduce the population, and then you have systems in place that you control. So if you're going to control the masses, for example, the very first thing we see in Genesis chapter 2 is that God puts the man in the garden, and he gives him all the tree for food. He gives him everything he needs for food. So the first thing that God gives him food, well, in the last days, who's controlling the food supply? And there are 10 major organizations, the 10 largest food corporations in the world that basically control the food. Most people get their food from the grocery store, but if you go all the way back, and I'm doing a lot of research on this, it's always going to be about that system in the last days of the beast where you cannot buy or sell without the mark of the beast. So you won't have food, water, economy, labor, you know, all those things that God created. So it's really all about control, and it's happening quickly. I heard someone on Fox News talk about AOC and said, she's like a woman with water off a duck's back. She doesn't care what anybody says. She's just fast forwarding in her position. And a lot of young people are getting on board and following this woman.
Oh, you know what? Even the Australian media outlet, news.com.au, speaks favorably of AOC. you just can't make this stuff up. Like, they would rather side with AOC than side with Trump. That really says a lot, doesn't it? I mean, the fact that the media has demonized and demonized and demonized Trump so much that they have gotten to the point where they would rather side with a socialist, an out-card-carrying socialist, than they would with Donald Trump, who was a free market, pro-free speech, pro-liberty president. And the fact that they are siding with a socialist just is absolutely mind-blowing. It's jaw-dropping, like the times that we are living in. It really is extraordinary.
Yeah, it really is. So let's talk about this. It's one of the subjects you brought up, and let's see how this ties into the new world order of things. We know the month of June has been taken over by the homosexual LGBTQ community, that all month this month around the world, there have been pride marches and demonstrations. And in Jerusalem, Israel, and Tel Aviv, they burst out on June 14th. Today is the 19th, so it's been 5 days. The largest gathering of homosexual, lesbian, transgender people. Meantime, Iran is kind of acting up. And how defiant of a spirit is it for Jerusalem, Israel, and Tel Aviv? And I know we talked about this last year, but how defiant is it for them to just do this in the face of their God, to allow these evil, wicked things to be promoted and just kind of put out there for the whole world to see in their shame and debauchery? I mean, how is this all connected to what the enemy is doing to set things up for his power control?
Well, it's very, very interesting with what's happening at the moment, Pastor Vincent. And, you know, what they're saying at the moment is that Iran could actually target Israel to escalate tensions with the U.S. And this is a report that's just come out. Israeli Western intelligence officials said to warn that Tehran is frustrated at failure to force Washington to the negotiating table. And there's growing concern among Israeli and Western intelligence officials that Iran could initiate a provocation against Israel to escalate its feud with the United States and force Washington to the negotiating table, including a report, according to a report on Wednesday. So it is interesting. And the other, that's one of the motivating factors for Iran. But one of the other motivating factors for Iran is that when Iran attacks Israel, they evoke sympathy from the Sunnis. And really, this is the galvanizing factor within the Arab world. And this is the thing that unites Sunni and Shiite, and that's their hatred of Israel. So if Iran wanted to deflect hatred from the Sunnis, then what no better way than to attack Israel? You know, and really, this could be the galvanizing, unifying event that could unite the Muslim world against Israel. I mean, you could just imagine. Could you imagine if Iran dropped a nuclear bomb on Tel Aviv and flattened Tel Aviv? Can you imagine what that would do to the Arab world? I mean, the Arab world would all of a sudden look at Iran no longer as an enemy, but as a, you know, they have just done what every Muslim has been desired to do for centuries, you know. And so it would change the dynamic within Islam itself if Iran were to ever do that. So, yeah, interesting times that we're in at the moment. And it's, boy, I mean, the Middle East at the moment is a powder keg. Just anything, like any incident could actually set that off. In fact, I posted an article yesterday where the UN officials are actually saying that the United States is considering a tactical strike against one of Iran's uranium nuclear facilities in response to the attacks on the Japanese oil tankers. So, yeah, so it's real. Everything's it's a tinderbox at the moment.
Well, that's interesting you bring that up. I have the opportunity tomorrow. I'll be interviewing, Mark Davidson, and he wrote the book about the Iranian conflict. You've met Mark. You've spoken in conference with him down in Tennessee. And
actually, I don't think I have.
Yeah, he was there. I don't know if you met him or not, but he wrote about the Iranian conflict. He called me the other day, just out of the blue, and said, I'm warning you that if there's one move, it could be fatal with Iran. I said, well, you need to come on the radio broadcast. So tomorrow I'll interview him about what he knows. He's been following this from Daniel chapter 8. I mean, he goes into great detail about all of these things. You know, it's interesting because I predicted, and I still do, I predicted quietly, you know, just, you know, who am I, just whatever, but that there, 2019, there would be a summer of violence. And summertime begins here in a couple of days on June 21st. And I think the world right now, quite frankly, is kind of laughing, kind of smirking, smocking about the, you know, the gloom doom predictions that are coming from, you know, different people. And, you know, time goes by and nothing happens and, you know, people just move on. But there's always those moments, those suddenlies in Parkland, Florida, or in Las Vegas, Nevada, or in a church in, you know, Texas, a Baptist church, where we see these devastating events. And Daniel, I predict in my spirit, I will not say thus saith the Lord at this moment, but I really do believe that the summer, which will begin on June 21st and go all the way into September, we are going to see a summer of violence. And I began to look over in Hong Kong, and I saw the violent eruptions in Hong Kong, Venezuela, different places around the world, in France, there's just this growing tension. And the closer we get to the elections of 2020, I'm pretty sure that we're going to see, you know, we are 6 months away from the year 2020 in our Gregorian calendar. And in the Hebrew calendar, that actually marks the year 6000, meaning complete. I mean, we are so on the edge of so many different things. And maybe some of the watchmen out there seem to get weary at times about saying things because, you know, the world, the rest of the world is kind of flaunting and parading and marching and, you know, everybody's doing their thing. But this moment of devastation, the moment of death and destruction, with the possibility of nuclear wars, and according to the book of Revelation, is not something that can be discounted, and the watchmen cannot afford to be silent at this time just because they're weary. Is that, would you agree with that?
Well, as I was just saying earlier in regard to what's happening over in the Middle East, I mean, the Middle East is really, as I said, I mean, it could just take a minor incident that could set off a massive war. So there is that scenario there. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the other thing too, though.
But isn't that what they were saying about North Korea? That North Korea was the big looming electromagnetic pulse, and the, you know, the war with them, Barack Obama was going to go to war, and then it was just diffused like that. So is this just another, you know, card in the deck that's being used, or are there biblical, serious, you know, potentialities here with something going on with Iran?
It's a good question. I think Trump doesn't want another war. He wants to avoid a war because he wants to keep his record intact. The fact that he has avoided wars adds to his credibility as a leader, and this is something that the American people want to see. But I think Iran understands this, and they want to push Trump into a corner. They're going to try and really push the envelope with Trump. So this is going to be interesting. The other thing too is what's happening in Taiwan, and I'm glad you mentioned that because that is really, really concerning, because China is really pushing the envelope as well, because really their intentions for Hong Kong and Taiwan is becoming increasingly obvious. Well, they're flat out saying they are brazenly saying what they want to do, what China wants to do. So they want to basically reinstate their sovereignty over Hong Kong, and then they want to capture Taiwan. And so they are absolutely determined to achieve those goals. So again, how the United States reacts to that, who knows? You know, one scenario could be is that if there is a conflict that breaks out in the Middle East in regard to Iran, it could be an opportunity for China to capitalize on that, because America will be distracted focusing on the war in Iran, and China would then make the most of America's distraction and capture Taiwan. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Could it spill over to violence this month? Possibly. Who knows? I mean, I think Trump wants to avoid war as much as he possibly can. By the way, if there is a major conflict, and if we see some huge collateral damage, and if, you know, if China ends up capturing Hong Kong and then Taiwan, and we see a worst case scenario where Iran does something crazy, then you can take it to the bank that the left within America would blame Trump. In fact, they will demonize Trump over this like you wouldn't believe. And they will see, it's not just Trump that they would absolutely demonize, but it's all every conservative. They will absolutely take it to the they would demonize any Trump supporter and throw up the biggest, how can I say, controversy. They'll kick up anything they possibly can over this. So, take it to the bank that if something major happens, Trump is going to get blamed and they will take it out on his supporters.
Oh, absolutely. They've been doing that from the beginning. When I woke up this morning, I was reading out of Luke chapter 19, and it says, when Jesus was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it, saying, if you had known, even thou, at least in this day, the things which belong to your peace, but now they are hid from your eyes. For the days shall come upon you, and your enemies shall cast a trench about you, and compass you round, and keep you in on every side. And they shall lay even with the ground and your children within thee, and they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of your visitation. I am marveling, I have to be honest with you, and it may be just elementary, but I am marveling. I can't fathom it. I'm kind of like, I can't believe this. That while we're talking about all these things that are growing around us prophetically of the destruction of the times we're in, that Israel, Jerusalem, United States, you know, the nations we think are the good guys are parading and permitting the parading of the thing that God detests the most. Mm. And I think to myself sometimes, how is it possible that we are, you know, suggesting that we're the good guys anymore? And forgive me, I don't mean to, you know, maybe I'm getting to that point going, you know, maybe we're thinking about all these things, but it seems like the pressure's really beginning to mount towards anything that resists these abominable things that are being allowed and promoted. I mean, I have to say, Donald Trump, I mean, he got behind this whole thing with the homosexual agenda. You know, he wants to decriminalize this in other places around the world. Hmm. And, you know, you start setting back and you start thinking, you know, something's wrong here that the world is parading. Yeah. Hollywood is advancing the filth, the corruption, the degradation without any fear at all. And all these reports and rumors about, well, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and nothing really happens at the major levels. I have to believe it's at the door. Mm. I have to believe that God's justice is going to go forth in this earth.
You really do wonder. I mean, the fact that, I mean, gosh, we've discussed this before, but part of the reason why I believe that when God drops the hammer, when God says enough is enough, and he pours out judgment on America, it's going to be overwhelming. Overwhelming, but as the scriptures say, overwhelming and righteous, you know. But I think at the moment, what you're seeing happening in America, Pastor Vincent, is that God is drawing a line in the sand, and we are seeing you can see that there are these two sides between different peoples. There are states that are passing pro-life heartbeat laws, and they're becoming a sanctuary for the unborn, and they're doing what they can and basically have gone on one side. And then on the other side, you can see other states like Michigan and Illinois and states like in New York. New York just passed legislation the other day where they are prepared to finance abortions for people out of state, so that if anyone can't get an abortion in other states and they can travel to New York, I think New York has set aside over $250,000 to pay for abortions for people out of state. I mean, that's just incredible, the depth of depravity that these states are going. But again, I think God is defined. There is a dividing line, and God is earmarking these places that have rebelled against God and are shaking his fist at him and spitting in his face. He has marked them for judgment. He's marked them for destruction. Whereas the other places that have that are passing pro-life laws and doing what they can to adhere to biblical principles, God is going to be lenient on those places where he's going to pour out his wrath on those other places. So I think, God is a God of justice. He's a God of mercy. And I think we'll see his justice, and we're also going to see his mercy. So, but one thing I think we need to pray, and this is what we saw Habakkuk pray, and Habakkuk prayed, he said, "Lord, in wrath, remember mercy." And I think that's an appropriate prayer to pray. I think wrath is coming. There's no way out of it. It's not if, it is actually when. It's when the wrath of God is coming. And but when the wrath of God comes, our prayer should be, "Lord, in wrath, remember mercy."
Amen to that. And thank you. I think you just really nailed it for me personally, maybe for others, you know, because we do know good things are happening within our country, around the world. There's some good people here. And what I saw while you were talking about God dividing and drawing a line was Moses and Korah. And in those days where an evil spirit rose up in Korah and he wanted to have the rule, you know, who are you, Moses? We're going to take the authority here. We're going to govern. And a lot of the governors and people that are in those positions of power are basically saying, we're going to rule by our own righteousness. We're going to rule by our imagination. We're going to rule what makes the people happy. Whereas God raises up rulers of righteousness to lead the people in the way of righteousness. And so drawing the line, you know, that is very powerful, because the earthquake came and devoured everybody that was lined up with Korah and that false system of government. And there is a false system of government in our land today and around the world today. And would to God that God would allow that separation. And if you're standing on the fence, I mean, if you're in the middle, you're going right down into the crack when everything opens, right? So maybe a big time for people to make a decision. What side of the day are you on?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is exactly what is going on. Another thing that's interesting is that you see in Revelation that it says that the wicked will continue to be wicked and the righteous will continue to be righteous. So I think it's going to come to a point where it's going to be the state of the wickedness of the people is going to be set, and it won't change, and that trajectory will continue to go on. And that's sobering, but also when you consider that the righteous will continue to be righteous, I mean, it's a bittersweet thing. I mean, it's but it just reinstates the fact that God has earmarked the people for destruction. The same thing is happening here in Australia, Pastor Vincent. Like Victoria, and particularly Melbourne, are passing some of the most ungodly, the most depraved laws. I mean, they just passed an euthanasia law now, and they now have a hospital that is preparing serum to kill people. You know, that there are now hospitals that have a mandate to save lives and to take lives. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. But the same thing here in Australia. We're seeing parts of Australia. And I, you know what, it's interesting, Vincent, because it's also a city-country thing. And this is a principle that goes right back to the Word of God. The big cities is where you'll find the majority of the iniquity and the wickedness. Wickedness and iniquity and evil is always part and parcel with the big cities. Within the big cities, you'll find iniquity. It's just the way it is. You know, this is where you find the Marxists. This is where you'll find the homosexuals. This is where you'll find all of the ungodly parts of society you'll find in the big cities. So I think it's, you know, and what did we see? We saw Babylon, the city, destroyed in the book of Genesis. We saw not only Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed, but all the cities of the plains were destroyed. And again, we see city after city that gets destroyed. And finally, in the book of Revelation, and in Revelation chapter 18, we see the city of Babylon, the mystery, the Babylon the Great, that is being destroyed. So I think we're going to see the same principles. We're going to see big cities that are going to be destroyed. And incidentally, if there ever is a nuclear war that breaks out, it'll be the city that will be bombed. So, you know, let's just wait and see what happens. I mean, when it happens, our flesh will react with horror and trauma, but we need to see in the spirit what God is doing. We need to accept that it's God's judgment, and God is just as perfect in his wrath and anger and judgment as he is in his love and mercy and grace. And we need to understand that God has to act. He cannot allow sin in its extremity to be to go unchecked. You know, for God will not be mocked. There will come a time when he will act. And I think that time is coming soon.
Wow, well said. Again, you're drawing the line, and it's an understanding, really, to our hearts that wicked men are going to be wicked. And if we're expecting to change the world so that everybody's righteous, that's not going to happen. Obviously, you brought that point up, and that's, you know, that kind of simplifies things. And yet, on the other hand, we realize that the wicked, we were once one of them. And thank God that we got saved by grace through faith, because somebody declared unto us the gospel of Jesus Christ, and that we still need to be out there seeking to win souls. But the day will come where God will say to his people, enter into the ark, shut the door, because the flood is coming. And not a flood of water this time, but a flood of fiery indignation that will hit the nations of the earth. I mean, these are the days of Noah, and this is what God is preparing many people for in the hour in which we live. Well said, Daniel, son.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting. It's a quote by G.K. Chesterton, and he said, "The issue is now clear. It is between light and darkness, and everyone must choose his side."
Beautiful quote. You know, one of the things that I've enjoyed having you for the last couple of years on this radio broadcast are those quotes that you have found. There is such wisdom. They are nuggets to anybody that has an ear to hear in the hour in which we live, where, you know, people, we're not just feeding off of our thinking and our modern day understanding of things. We are biblical, but there were people in the past that had some biblical insights that put it together very well. And to present those into these broadcasts, I deeply appreciate them. I've always marveled at that. And so we're living in a world, Daniel, where, you know, it seems to be, honestly, going mad. It is a mad, mad world. And somehow, some way, yep, the nations are drinking the cup. You brought that up a couple of weeks ago. Go ahead and speak into that for just a few moments.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if you noticed, but I think it was Botswana. I think it was it Botswana? I can't remember. But Botswana has just legalized homosexuality. And there was also another nation as well. There were two nations that just recently have legalized homosexuality. And interestingly, it actually has happened during Pride Month. And if you remember what Trump said, like, he basically encouraged nations to decriminalize it. So it says that the nations drank her wine and that they have now gone mad. So the influence of America is perverting and corrupting other nations. So, and that really, goodness me. I mean, again, it only just goes to it adds to the credentials of America as being the harlot, the mystery Babylon. I don't believe that we're talking about the Catholic Church in regard to mystery Babylon, nor do I believe that it's Saudi Arabia. I believe it's obvious. I think the more the days go on, the more obvious it is that that Mystery Babylon represents the West. But I will say this. I will say that what I think is interesting is that I believe that it could very well end up being a coalition of Western nations. And this is why I think that America is heading towards a... I don't believe America is going to stay united, and I know that there is a huge nationalist push which is really encouraging. And it was really encouraging to see Trump launch his campaign in Florida and see the huge support. But here's the thing, like, America is becoming increasingly fractured. Yes, there is a huge surge of support for nationalism for the right, but the left are becoming increasingly polarized. And I believe this is going to come to a point, Pastor Vincent, where the United States is not going to be united anymore. I believe that the United States is going to come to a point where it's going to have an irreconcilable divorce, and the left will divorce the right. And I believe that it's going to happen culturally, as it already is happening culturally, but it will end up even being geographic. And when it does become a geographic, I believe that that's when the battle lines will be drawn. Well, this is where the line will be drawn in the sand, and it will basically make it even more clearer for the people who are living in these wicked cities to come out from them, to come out from this harlot, because God's judgment will come down on it. And I think we'll see these wicked parts of America could very well enter into a union with other parts of the world that share the same harlot, that have the same harlot identity. So yeah, this is just, again, this is conjecture. This is me speculating, but it could end up that way, because I don't believe all of America will come under the huge, overwhelming wrath and judgment. I believe God has set aside parts of America that will avoid this judgment, whereas other parts most certainly will be, as it is here in Australia. I mean, there are parts of Australia that I believe are earmarked for judgment. There's no doubt about that at all. In fact, coming up next year, I think we're going to have a global, like we've had the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras for many years, but they're now trying to make it a global thing. So the first global gay Mardi Gras, and Sydney wants to host it. So, yeah, it's, you know, remember that the prostitute in Revelation 17, she sits on many nations of peoples and languages. So, yeah, so that kind of makes me wonder where it's not specifically talking about America. I think it's encompassing many nations and different languages. And I think we're going to see that the corrupt West is going to come under massive judgment.
Yeah, there is a cup in her hand that she put it to the lips of many nations, and they drink and go mad. When we traveled around the world, we noticed the American influence is everywhere. So rather than the United States of America, we're going to have the divided states of America. And then, Daniel, when I study the book of Revelation, I noticed that there are oftentimes what I call the pause in the pangs. The woman is in travail. The beginning of sorrows has begun, and there's are these labor pains, and then there's a pause in between. We are in the pause right now, and I believe marking June 21st all the way, those next 4 months, as we move into the summer months, we're going to see the pangs begin again. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't begin on the West Coast in the state of California, and then moving up the coast in this new level of pangs that is coming. So time will tell. And as always, you have enriched our broadcast. We're so thankful. We have a minute left in the broadcast. A final word to our listeners before we go.
Final word. Actually, I do have a final word. In fact, I just want to read to you another quote, because I think this quote is really, really good. This is from Francis Frangipane. And Francis says, "Our primary purpose in life must be to abide in Christ. Otherwise, we can become so consumed with the deteriorating condition of the world that we fail to see the deteriorating condition of our own soul."
Wow.
And I just think that is a profound, profound quote.
My God, it certainly is, Daniel. Once again, brother, what a great way to go out. I want to inform our listeners, as you're going to go to Beddy Buy and keep yourself warm over there in Australia, and we want to thank you for being on the broadcast once again. That right now on omegaradio.org, there's a roundtable discussion. We're going to start that right now, and then 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we're going to broadcast. Daniel Seckham, once again, thank you. Tomorrow, Mark Richardson will be with us on the Iranian conflict. I hope everybody will join in. Daniel, God bless you, sir. And I know, again, in 2 months, you'll be heading this way. We'll talk more about it, and we'll get the information out, let people know you're coming. And God bless you, my friend. Shalom.